podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Have you given any thought, Suge, about, do you have any idea how many deadlines you think you'll miss this season?
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello everybody and welcome to Planet FPL, the world where everything revolves around Fantasy Premier League. My name's Serge.
And my name is James.
And today, as part of our Content Creator Week, James, we have a guest.
A guest, not just a guest, the general. We are delighted to be joined by Mark McGettigan, one of the most famous faces in FPL Twitter. Three top 500 finishes to his name. We're going to see if we can get some insight off this man today. Hello, Mark. How are you?
How are you doing, guys? Good to be here. It's good to get back into FPL content. I haven't really been, I think like yourselves, 40 euros didn't do an awful lot FPL-wise. Slowly getting back into it. So yeah, it's good. It's good to be recording again.
I think with the timing of the game release in the middle of the Euros, can we be bothered? But we've recorded a couple now of the Content Creator Week pods and just having conversations with people and picking up some tips and ideas. It's getting my juices going a little bit. I don't know about you, James, but I'm starting to now think, right, okay, I'm getting my head really into FPL space.
No, not really. But after this one, Mark's going to pick my FPL team for me. And then we're going to be off and away, aren't we, mate?
I'll pick yours and you pick mine. How's that?
You don't want me to do that, mate. I'm telling you. Mark, tell us a bit about this FPL history.
Yeah, so I've been playing for a long, long time. I was just having to think before we started recording. I remember playing when the FPL website went live first, which I think was 2002-03. So at that point, I started quite young. At that point, I was only 12 or 13 years old. And it was myself and my best friend, Paul. We were huge Championship Manager addicts. We used to play Championship Manager 99 mainly. I remember we used to, when we were in maybe our first year of secondary school, His house was right beside the school, so we go there at lunchtime for a bit of soup, a bit of toast, and a bit of Championship Manager, and we forget to go back to school. You know, one more game before we knew it was 3 or 4 o'clock, and we'd missed the second half of the day, which was great. So it was actually him who introduced me. He found the FPL website before I did, and he sent it to me, or he let me know about it. He probably sent me a letter in the post back then to let me know about it, and that's where it started. You know, I remember my very early memories are players like, you know, Rocky Santa Cruz and Benny McCarthy at Blackburn. Radhi Zaidi at Bolton is another one I remember having at certain points as well. So yeah, it's been a long time, been playing for a long time. And obviously, it's probably maybe 5 or 6 years ago then where it really took a hold of me and became an addiction like it does for many people.
Is it an addiction?
I think for me, it is. I think I've got an addictive personality. And I think I was definitely a Championship Manager, Football Manager addict through my teenage years. And then once I found FPL, I think it quickly took a hold of me. I used to do a fair bit of gambling back in my uni days, you know, 19, 20, 21. Probably too much at the time, you know, spending almost everything I had instead of buying books and stuff like that. But I find now, you know, I can't remember the last time I put a bet on because the FPL gives me the same buzz without, you know, dipping into my pocket. So I think there's a big crossover there. And I know we do see a lot of people coming from a gambling background and poker and stuff who really enjoy FPL. So I do, yeah. Not everyone will admit it's an addiction, but I think for me it is. I don't think I can deny it.
I'm just thinking all the young kids listening, you don't need to go to school and you don't need to buy books at uni. You can still turn out quite all right as Mark has done.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there's definite links that are really interesting in terms of, I agree with a lot of the people I speak to have got history of football management simulation in some way, be it a Championship Manager or the newer years, the Football Manager games, for example, because within all of us, there's this Football Manager through the teams we support. We all think we could pick a better team than Nuno Santo, or in Mark's case, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And we all believe we can put the best team together. So there's that. And I think Mark nails a great point there about kind of covering for the vice of gambling. I mean, this is a great distraction from gambling because basically you get all the horrible addiction things from gambling, but you don't lose the fucking money at the same time, right?
Yeah, and
there's definitely something to be said about immersing yourself from a gambling culture into FPL. We know a lot of people who are kind of reformed gamblers who their headspace is filled with FPL now. And I don't think it's a healthy place to be, but at least you're not spunking the mortgage up the wall or anything like that at the same time, right?
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, if you're a gambler, you know, is it better to be down in Paddy Power 9 to 5, or is it better to be spending 9 to 5 on Scout or Hub looking at stats and, you know, crying over your captaincy at the weekend? I think I know which one's better.
Interesting. You've done the Match of the Day challenge a lot, haven't you?
Yeah, and as we're speaking, I'm just thinking about that as well, because I think that links back to my Football Manager, Championship Manager days as well, because I always remember when you play Championship Manager or some of the Football Manager games, you would always have an option on the match day. You know, do you watch the live text? Do you watch the little guys running around the pitch for say, you know, a couple of minutes? Or do you get the instant result, 90 minutes, score, who scored? And I think that's why I like Match of the Day Challenge. I like getting all the information just together. So I like the idea of, rather than, you know, sitting checking your phone all day every 10 minutes on a Saturday, I like to switch off, get out there, completely forget about FPL, which is a very hard thing to do. I mean, no matter how much you try and forget about it, it still is on your mind throughout the day. But I like that then sitting down 10:30, you've had a good day with a family or whatever you've been up to, so you've made use of your day, and then you get to enjoy or not enjoy 90 minutes rather than, you know, 7-8 hours, especially last season. You know, when we had, what, 4 games some Saturdays, it's too much for anyone. So yeah, I didn't do the Match of the Day Challenge as much as I would have liked last season, but I'm determined to get back to doing it a lot more this season.
I think it's probably harder last season because of the way the games were spread a lot more to try and avoid football. I'm definitely one of those people that if there's games going on, other than when West Ham are playing, I will always have a FPL hat on, and I'll need to be checking, like, did one of my players score points or assists or not? I need to know. Do you find the weeks when you do the Match of the Day Challenge change the way you make decisions, or does it not really make a difference on how you play FPL? Like, when you receive the information in one go, you don't get as many highs and lows, right, as you might have if it's spread out throughout an entire weekend, where sometimes we make emotional decisions about players. Like, if they've missed the penalty or they've had a really good chance and they've missed and they've not scored it, you think, ah, fuck that bastard, he's getting out of my team straight away. Whereas if you don't get that information, you just know at the end of the game, 6 points, that's it. You maybe don't get sucked in as emotionally with your decision-making.
Yeah, I think you've nailed it there with the emotional decisions, because if you take yourself out of FPL mode on a Saturday and a Sunday, I think you're probably in a healthier mindset come Monday, Tuesday then. You know, you haven't built up a lot of, you know, angst towards certain players, or even the opposite, you know, a lot of love for players if you've been watching them 90 minutes and they've looked amazing the whole game. So yeah, I think the weeks where I do watch Match of the Day rather than sitting down watching 3 games on a Saturday, I probably am in a better headspace the following week. But I'll still watch the games anyway. You know, on a Saturday I'll record the games, and then my wife's a teacher, so Monday, Tuesday during the day when she's at work, that's when I'll sit down and watch them. But I find I almost enjoy watching the games knowing what the result is, because I'm not waiting for something to go wrong or something to go right. I know what's happened already. So that's when I can really just analyse the game without being too emotionally invested. So I really enjoy watching them back after the fact, because also you can watch 90 minutes in about 70 minutes. You know, you fast forward the throw-ins, the substitutions, you can get through them a lot quicker as well. So yeah, I do enjoy watching them back after the fact.
Don't have to listen to the halftime bullshit analysis.
Exactly.
It's an interesting concept. No, because I know you do, obviously, the iTest podcast for your patrons. And the idea of actually watching the football when you're removed from the emotion is quite interesting. By that point, you know what's happened to your FPL team. So nothing you watch is going to... You might be, I guess if you're watching a game live, you might be swayed by, I'm keeping more of an eye on player X because he's in my team, or player Y because I think I'm buying him next week. Whereas you can actually kind of remove yourself. You might have already read reports about the games, player X did this, that, and the other, and you're prepared. And you're watching it removed from emotion. It's quite an interesting
concept. When you watch, say you'll record a game on a Saturday, and then you watch it on a Monday. Like, if you watch the game live on a Saturday, your mood is going to be like this through the game, depending on what's happening. But if you watch it on a on a Monday, it's just, you know, you're not getting the highs and the lows because it's already happened. And I just feel like you can really analyze the game better then when you're not, like you say, you're not watching your own player as much maybe as you would if it was live. Because, you know, when you're watching your own player live, if you've got Trent, you're not going to have your eyes on Robertson too much. Your eyes are always going to be on that side of the pitch, for example. Mm. So, yeah, I think that's why I think I enjoy it. And I feel like I get more out of it if I watch it afterwards rather than live. The other thing about not watching it live is when you watch it live, most people, what have you got in your hand as well? You've got your phone. So if your player scores, your first thought is, I'm going to tweet about this. And before you know it, you've spent 10 minutes. You spent 10 minutes on the phone and you've missed 10 minutes of the game. So when I'm watching an eye test on a Monday or Tuesday, the phone's in another room and it's, you know, 100% focus.
I love that my player scored. I got to tell everyone.
Yeah, it's kind of like they don't know already. But you don't see that too often, right? You know exactly that. Especially if it's a player that you've picked in your FPL team. That's what we'd call a differential or whatever else. You need to let the world know that you picked that player, right? The number of times I've seen you tweet about doing the match of the day challenge, and I'm like, yeah, I want to do it. I always try to do it, and I've never managed to make it through. But this season, one of the weeks, I'm going to do it. Got to do it.
It's very, very, when things go right, it's very, very enjoyable. But then obviously on the flip side, which I find tends to happen more often than not, is things don't go well and you score 27 points over the weekend and you wait all day for a miserable match of the day. But again, at least you're not spending all Saturday pissed off about it.
So you don't get the
midnight
scores.
Before you go to bed, you're pissed off instead.
And then you can't sleep for 4 hours going over it all in your head.
So you don't check the scores before match of the day. You literally watch match of the day and you pick up the results and goal scores in.
Yeah, don't even check the team news. So let's say deadline's 11 o'clock Saturday morning. I wouldn't even, you know, it's good now we've got the half an hour window, so the team news doesn't come through right away. So it gives you 10 or 15 minutes, have a little look at Twitter and then just switch off before the first team news comes through. And that's it. Phone's off for the day. I tell my wife, if you see any news, don't tell me anything. And then, you know, we'll go out for the day and do something. And then you switch on Gary Lineker at 10:30 and you don't know anything. You don't even know if your players have been in the starting 11. So it's a roller coaster watching match today then.
My wife does that sometimes because what I end up doing, particularly with the night games quite often, Harry's normally going to bed about that time. So I might tape them and then I'm watching them as if they're live like an hour later or something like that. And my missus will be tutting away during the game. And I know at this point it's finishing 0-0 and it's awful. And she's just sitting, why are you sitting through this shit game? When I can tell you now it's 0-0 and it's crap. Yeah, but I've got to cut the clean sheets coming here, love. I'm interested to know, Mark, if FPL is kind of an addiction, if you've got Rafinha game week one and he scores an 89th minute winner at Old Trafford, happy or sad?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I've mentioned this quite a few times before that I'm obviously a Manchester United fan, but I don't think I was ever as hardcore as other Manchester United fans are. And I think as well, like many Manchester United fans, since Alex Ferguson left, it's probably been easier to say you're not as hardcore as you were. And people get upset when you know, people will say, you know, if I tweet about something, you know, someone scores against Manchester United, I get a few points, I'm happy. People always say, you're not a true fan. You know, whatever. There's different types of fans. There's hardcore fans. There's football fans. I would say I'm more of a football fan, more of a Premier League fan now than I am a Manchester United fan. So, you know, if I was, you know, clicking, I think you used to be able to do it. You pick your team on, when you're setting up your FPL team at the start, they ask you what your team is. And I think one of the options was general Premier League fan. I don't click that, but I probably should because that's probably what I am now. And I've always said through playing FPL for so long and since it's become full-time 3 or 4 years ago, I've probably gone from Manchester United fan number one. That's probably slipped down the pecking order now. For me, it's FPL team comes first. Probably Premier League fan second now and then probably Manchester United fan third. You know, I don't always watch United Champions League games. You know, I don't watch every United Premier League game. You know, I've only been to Old Trafford a few times, so I'm not as hardcore as some others. So back to the question, Rafinha. I mean, if we're going to lose the game, and I've got Rafinha, yeah, I'll take it. But I'd, take you know, three bonus points as well, please.
I mean, the boys at Who Got the Assist released the fandom pod literally yesterday, and the way that Tom differentiated was fan versus follower. And I think he described himself as an Arsenal follower more than an Arsenal fan, which is why he's comfortable putting his FPL team first. And I think there's a lot of people that are in that boat. Last season, West Ham had a good season, but prior to that, we would lose quite regularly. If we're going to be losing and we're rubbish, and I'm used to years and years of being rubbish, I'll take my FPL points against West Ham. So be it. But it does get a bit different when your team are doing well. You suddenly start not wanting players to score points against your team.
You see, that's why I think it's probably been easier for me to become a, you know, more of a Premier League fan, because, you know, I haven't been fighting for the title for a couple of years. I think that might be slightly different if, let's say, at the moment, if I was a Liverpool fan or a Manchester City fan. Or even like yourself, Suze, last season when West Ham were doing so well, then I think it does probably come a bit harder. But I think a lot of my success in the FPL has come because I'm, you know, I don't have really strong allegiances. You know, I see quite a lot of managers, and even some of the top managers out there, they struggle sometimes with their allegiances to their team, particularly maybe if they've just been promoted. You know, they're excited, they want to have a couple of their assets, but, you know, it's probably not going to get you a huge amount of FPL points. So you've got to try and leave that at the door, I think, at the start of every season. You know, put your allegiances aside. I mean, I usually have three Liverpool players on my team, and it doesn't even cross my mind that I'm, you know,
Well, what you mentioned there is interesting, because it's not just the allegiance to your team, but it's the bias it causes you against other teams. Like Aaron, who's an Arsenal fan, he won't pick Spurs players. So it's his following of Arsenal that's causing him to not pick another team's players. And when you start having bias about teams that are not even the one that you support or follow, it can get quite messy.
You know what? The most extreme example of that I've seen was this season, playing the Scottish fantasy game for the first time. And I think I finished 10th overall. And I think one of the main reasons is because from January onwards, I stopped kind of, because every weekend I was watching the Scottish highlights. That's when you know you're an addict. I mean, there it is right there. But do you know what? It really,
sorry, Scotland.
He's the one who's got to walk out his door and worry about it.
Exactly. I think the second half of the Scottish fantasy season, I was very casual. I stopped watching the highlights at the weekend, so I was kind of winging it for a long time, but I still didn't fall away too much. And what you'll find in Scottish fantasy, you know what it's like up here with Celtic and Rangers, it's so hardcore. So you'll have a huge amount of Celtic fans playing the fantasy, and they'll refuse to pick the Rangers players and vice versa. So I went into it, you know, I'm a Celtic fan, but I'm not hardcore. So all season, I think I had three Rangers defenders. And if you didn't have Rangers defenders, you know, you weren't going to do well in fantasy. So that was a good example of, if you want to do well at fantasy, you've got to put your feelings aside. But very hard for people, obviously, up here to do that.
That's very interesting. Because
in Tavernier every week.
Exactly. Trouble, I mean, right? Possibly the best fantasy player of all time. That's easy.
Yeah,
it's funny because, James, do you remember we did a Patreon pod earlier in the season when you were doing quite well in Gaffer or the Championship? And again, you didn't watch or really get involved with the games or followed. It was literally winging it, is the way Mark put it. And that's what you were kind of sort of doing in Gaffer, and ended up doing really well at that point as well.
What you don't know is we're doing a pod on Scotland Fantasy on Patreon next week. I'll talk to you about that next week. I'm interested to know, Mark, Twitter, you've got what, nearly 150,000 followers?
Yeah, I think it's heading towards 150.
It feels like only yesterday I was messaging you and saying, well done on hitting the 100K, mate. How did that explode so big? And how long have you been on Twitter?
I think it's roughly 4 years now, possibly five. I remember setting it up. I remember having a personal Twitter account under my own name. And I started finding people like Ben Dinnery, probably Scout initially as well, just using those maybe three or four accounts to help with my fantasy decisions at the end of the week. And then I had the back-to-back top 500 finishes. And then I realized it was actually a lot of people who were using Twitter, you know, to set up a fantasy account. So I just set it up. I think it was during one of the summers. So I set it up at the right time because I just had two top 500 finishes. I mean, if you're ever going to set up a Twitter account, that's probably the time to do it. And I'll always remember, and I'll always be grateful to the legend that is FPL Chief. I think it's FPL Hints now on Twitter. He got in touch with me, or I got in touch with him, and I just wrote an article, just a very short article about how I'd achieve those, you know, top 500 finishes. And it was at the right time in pre-season, just maybe a week or two before the season started. And lots of people, you know, Fancy Irma, people like FPL Fly, called it. You know, those guys, when I started on Twitter, were absolutely, you know, so supportive. They were so welcoming. And once I released that article, I thought, yeah, a few people will read this, but retweet, and it probably got about 100 retweets. And then my first two or three days on Twitter, I had maybe 4,000 or 5,000 followers. So it was absolutely crazy. And then it just kind of started to grow. I would say organically, but that would be a lie, because I'm like a lot of people who start out on FPL Twitter first. I was one of those, probably one of those annoying people who I would release something, I would tag 9 accounts and try and get them to retweet it. I would send nice messages to people to say, do you mind retweeting this? And most of them did. And that really helped as well. But I got to a point then, once the Twitter account probably gets to about 40 or 50,000, it probably just starts to grow itself then. You don't really need to do too much of that. So I don't do that anymore. But, you know, when people do come to me now, someone who's starting out, I'm always happy to get behind them, because I'll always remember I was one of those small accounts one time, and without the support of those people who I mentioned, you know, I wouldn't be where I am today. So I'm always very grateful to those guys at the very start.
Yeah, hear, hear. Does that, have you seen a big change in Twitter then? In terms of, because what you described there when you start, it sounds like quite a small kind of knit community. And I think those who have been around longer speak about that, in terms of it was more of a, even Late Rise was speaking to us about this on Monday. So just kind of tight knit, everybody in the Scout forums knew each other, etc. Whereas now there's content coming out your ears from everywhere. Is that the essence of the change, that it's just so much bigger now?
Yeah, I mean, even in a short time frame, you know, 3 or 4 years, I think it's changed massively. I mean, I do think back to those early days, and it did feel like a small group of people. You know, it probably was still a fair few hundred, but, you know, the very active ones was a small number. And obviously how it's changed now is people like myself obviously have contributed to it, but it's probably got a lot more commercial now. There's a lot of people trying to make a buck out of it. And I know a lot of people, you know, the original people, a lot of them probably don't like that, because you do always, it's like, I think it's like anything though, you know, the early days were great, but I think once something grows and grows and grows, it's always going to go the monetization route. And you know, there's, even though there's still probably not that many of us full time, you know, I think there's just going to be more and more as the years progress, because fantasy is only going to get bigger and bigger. And, yeah, I think that's the main change. It probably has maybe lost the community aspect a bit because of that. You know, we see a lot more division now. But again, I think we need to remember we're on Twitter, and Twitter is the most divisive, negative platform there is out there. So we just need the football to start, because there's so much nonsense out there.
Do you find then, Mark, like, because of that, is something I think Tom Cantor was speaking with us about, that kind of once you've seen one pre-season in the FPL community, you've kind of seen them all, if you will.
Yeah.
Do you feel it kind of a little bit of fatigue in that in pre-season, like you're just waiting for it to start now, basically?
Exactly.
Rather
exactly.
than kind of going over and over about, oh, this 4.5 versus this 4.5, etc. Yeah.
I think Tom's tweet today or yesterday summed it up, you know, those 5 or 6 bullet points. You know, it's just the same. If you've been on Twitter for 4 or 5 years, you can almost predict. You know, I think Mars had a tweet out the other day saying it's not pre-season until you've had the skill versus luck debate. So that's probably coming next week.
Mm. Oh, God.
It's just a cycle. Yeah, you see all these people doing the 4.5 million, you know, 2 or 3 way rotations. Once game week one comes, no one will be doing that. Or at least you'll start doing it and then stop. You know, quite simply, people start playing the game mentally too early. I think, you know, there's probably people out there tinkering every day now. And I think if you are one of those people, you should just stop, because by the time it gets to March, April, you'll be burnt out. And I would say the people who've been tinkering with their teams constantly for the last week or two, I would safely say you're probably not going to win FPL, because you're already overthinking, you're already overmanaging, and you know, the season hasn't even started. And, you know, we don't have any information. You know, I don't really go on last season. I think it's a bit of a clean slate. So, yeah, it's something I've learned over the seasons is stay away from it as long as you can in July and August.
I think my thoughts are, Serge, that, like, you can spend too much time overthinking this now, and then Team X goes and buys 3 or 4 players and the situation
is completely different
anyway. Yep. And to be honest, there's even a part of that, obviously, the transfer window this year is obviously back to not close until the end of August. So you've got the first 3 game weeks where the transfer window is still going to be open. Now, at least by the time we get towards game week one, you can look at half the teams and probably go, you know, if Sancho and Varane are both in the door at Manchester United, for example, you can probably look at them and go, maybe bar a midfielder, their business is probably done. So I know this is majority of what the team's going to be. If Tottenham, for example, get to game week one and haven't bought any players, you know that there are going to be some ins and outs still coming at that football club. So there's, even at that point, there's still so much up in the air. So I just feel like my perspective on it is knowing that shit is going to change during what you already see. I know you spoke, Mark, on your last 59th minute pod about the idea of maybe even not even pricing some players up at the start of a game. Like, for example, Harry Kane would have a completely different price as a Manchester City player versus a Tottenham player. I don't think they can go down that route and obviously not price up a player like that at the start. But it goes back to the whole point of launching the game so early. We know why they do it, but yeah, I agree. I think overthinking is a big issue. I've looked at my team probably twice since the game launched, and I'd say the first team I put together took me 10 minutes. I didn't put a lot of
exactly the same. I made a draft probably. I made the watch list in the beginning with an auto pick team, so I made the watch list for that podcast. But I mean, that podcast is probably about a month ago now. Yeah. I probably should start about thinking about doing another one sometime soon. Auto pick for the first 3 or 4 weeks, and then I logged in one day when I was bored, and I very quickly, like you, 10 or 15 minutes, bang, bang, bang. And it's the same as every team you see on Twitter at the moment anyway. So things will change, but I also think we need things to change, because it's very, very depressing seeing so many similar teams. And people talk about this template, but I think it was a very good tweet from Luke Disable a couple of days ago. You know, the template creates itself, because we're all looking at the same players at the same prices with the same fixtures. And FPL has almost, by the way they've priced the players, they've picked our teams for us. You know, there's probably about 20, 25 players. They don't really give us too many decisions to make, the way the prices are. For example, Salah versus Mane. It's those little things are disappointing. But unless there's drastic change with transfers, which hopefully there will be, I think this season could be the season where we see the most similar teams in the first game week of the season.
Well, you guys have not logged in. I logged in last night and made my team. But it's interesting you said stay away in July and August. Do you mean stay away from Twitter or stay away from the website itself? I suppose it's Twitter, isn't it? The noise that's on.
I think if you can, everything. And I've been on Twitter just dipping in and out recently the last couple of weeks. And I notice, obviously I notice who's tweeting, but I also notice who's not tweeting. And I think those are the guys that are playing it the right way. If they come back in with a week or two to go, they're a lot fresher in their minds than we are. And they haven't already had every player in and out of their draft. I think, obviously for us, we're content creators. There's a lot of people who are very hardcore FPL managers. It's impossible to stay away, you know, especially during these COVID times as well. It's a nice escape from life. But yeah, I think the best chance of doing well in FPL is doing as little as possible in July and August, because I think as well, when you're building a game week one team, I think I'm probably going to put less thought into my game week one team this season than ever before, because I don't think it's overly important, because you don't have any information. As long as it's a flexible squad structure, you've got the 90-minute guys, you know we're going to play game week one. It's all about what you do, game week two, game week three, game week four. Mm. You've got that wild card. So yeah, I think people probably overthink game week one when things change right away anyway, once a ball's kicked.
See, the content that I enjoy most in the summer, and so let's put it in the context of I'm not a good FPL manager. The reason I'm not a good FPL manager is because the way I make my decisions is not very geared towards FPL. And I like to think about content in the summer that's more maybe about how I'm making decisions or how I'm playing the game from a philosophical point of view, not is this 4.5 better than that 4.5. It's like, why? It comes back down to what James mentioned at the beginning of the show, right? With the addiction to Champ Man, or we all think that we're a better football manager. And I like to pick left field picks quite often because I like to think that I know better. And yet my history in FPL shows me that I don't. So when I logged in last night, I thought, why do I think I know better? Let me just pick a team of the most picked players based on a little bit of affordability, because obviously you can't just go with the most picked players and just do that. And it looked so template, like Dean, Shaw, Trent, Salah, so on and so on. I'm like, but not going the opposite way hasn't worked for me in the past. Why don't I just stick with this? And what you mentioned about game one being boring, I reckon I'm going to have up there as one of the most template teams in game week one, which is so dull. But it's going against my decision-making instincts generally, which haven't boded well. And it won't give me that glory tweet of, you know, picking some random player, but I don't really care.
Yeah, it's dull, but people have this thing, this big bad word, the template. It's like, you know, I don't even know where this has come from. You know, I go back to those 4 or 5 years ago when Twitter was a lot smaller. We certainly didn't have the word template being banded around every day. It's people get upset when they see a team that's, you know, similar to others. But, you know, going back to that point I made a wee while ago, the template is a template for a reason, because they are the players that look like they have the best chance of scoring the most points. So if you pick a team, let's say you pick a team, Suge, before you look at anyone else's, and then when you go on Twitter and you see loads of similar teams, I think the automatic human reaction is, oh, I don't like that now. But it shouldn't be, because you've picked it. You think those players are going to get the most points. Who cares if everyone else has the same team? You know, no one's going to have the same team as you from game week 1 to game week 38. And it's all about those little small decisions and when you make them throughout the season. So, I mean, there's 8 million people playing the game. There's going to be teams that are the same. So people, I think people need to stop worrying about, oh, my team's the same as everyone else's, I need to change it. You don't. You know, just back yourself and back those first instincts on players and teams.
Yeah, that's our problem, is backing our own instincts, Mark. Mm. So I think, we'll outsource. Should we outsource our decisions? Like Tom Cantor was going to outsource captaincy. Should we just outsource our team?
Yeah, Mark was saying that our teams won't be the same as anyone else's game week 1 to 38. You might find mine very similar to yours, Mark.
The thing is as well, though, you can have a template team, but there will be small differences. So you've got the combined effective ownership and things like that, right? Yep. Where you can still make your little gains. I feel like I've always had, I spoke about this on one of the earlier pods this week, about the kind of, or if his ownership's really high and I don't really like him, I wanna go against that. Whereas exactly like what Tom said about, say, Luke Shaw, it's almost, the ownership has almost become such that it's kind of a now, well, if I think he's going to play in game week 1, I probably need to get it now, because that ownership is absolutely massive. And he is a decent pick at 5.5 anyway. Although I don't know if you heard the news, guys, that it's been reported just before we started recording that he actually played, he actually suffered broken ribs in the England-Germany game and finished the tournament with broken ribs. So he might actually be a doubt now for game week 1.
Wow.
That's going to throw a lot of teams into a different selection, isn't he? Was he in about 44% of teams or something at the moment?
Yeah.
So that's the sort of thing, exactly. You can exactly overthink that. It's another perfect case. And then it drops game week 1. Oh, yeah, shit. Luke Shaw's going to be out till September. And more than two-thirds of the game's got to decide to get a... Or sorry, more than one-third of the game's got to decide to get a different defender.
Yeah, and very quickly, he's 5.3 million. And you're already
losing. Yeah, and exactly that. Yeah. And we'll be going back and buying him in October then at the cheaper price. How did the podcast come about, Mark, for you?
Yeah, going back to probably 3-4 years ago now, the Twitter account was growing quite well, so I started getting invited to do guest appearances, just like this. And I remember the very first one I did was called Fan Feud at the time. So it was the guys, I think it's, you know, three amigos now, Donica and Mars, and there was a couple of other guys involved at the time who are no longer involved. I think FPL Chef actually might have been on the first one I did as well. So that's going way back. And I did a few guest ones, you know, I did Fan Feud, I think FPL Surgery and a couple of other ones. And the comments that were coming back was, you know, really enjoyed the podcast. You know, there might have been 4 or 5 of us on at a time, so I didn't get that much time to speak. But people were sending me private messages saying, you know, really enjoyed you on the podcast. Would I like to hear more from you? So that kind of got my juices flowing then. And obviously other people were doing podcasts. So I said, you know what, I'll just try this. And it was the exact same way I do it now. It's not very technical. A laptop, a microphone, Audacity, press record, see what happens. Sitting on my kitchen table, no fancy music, you know, none of that kind of stuff. And then just put it out there. And people really enjoyed it, because I think it was different, because you've got so many excellent podcasts out there that have more than one person. But I think there wasn't many people just going solo. And I think my niche in the podcast field is probably, people know it's 30 minutes. People know they're going to get everything they need for the game week in that 30 minutes. They don't have to do an hour and a half. So I think people like that, especially people who've got busy lives, you know, kids, work, family. It's convenient for them. It just kind of took off from there. And the listenership numbers really, I couldn't believe it in the beginning, you know, hundreds into thousands, and it's just continuing to grow.
It's an extremely difficult gig to do that by yourself, mate. What do you have in front of you? You must have some sort of notes in front of you or something when you're doing it by yourself.
What I used to do early days was just A4 sheet of paper, make a few notes, just a bit of a rough structure. But I always find if you've got a very rigid structure, it doesn't flow very well. So just more bullet points and you kind of just expand on them. So I stepped up my game last season, started using Google Documents. So it's just in front of me on the screen. And again, still just a few bullet points each section, and then it's just kind of expanded. I think it flows better. I think the less notes you have, the more the podcast flows. But yeah, people always say, I don't know how you do that by yourself, but it's all I've ever known, because I just started out with, you know, a few listeners. So it was easy to get used to. And it just comes naturally to me now. You know, I spend all my time at home anyway, so I probably spend a lot of time talking to myself even when I'm not doing the podcast. So
I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of the length of the podcast, and it's very factual and to the point, and then that's it, and people tune in, they know what they're going to get in terms of you'll highlight the best captaincy picks and all of that kind of stuff. And that's it. It's your bite size. You know what you need, the basic information. Like, we can record for an hour and a half and we'll end up debating Burnley defenders, and the majority of players who are playing FPL couldn't care less about whether or not we're picking that player or that player.
Anyway.
But exactly. Whereas the majority of players do know, they just want the information that's going to affect them short and concise. And that's why I think it works so well.
Yeah, I think if I, you know, FPL podcasts in general, no pun intended, but for me, you know, 30 minutes is probably short, but I think it's right if it's only one person, because if I go 40, 50 minutes by myself, people will start to switch off. I think I would fall asleep listening to me for 40 or 50 minutes. So I think, but you know, it's with you guys, especially like now, if you've got three people, I think three is probably the magic number for podcasts. You know, you're going to want to do more than 30 minutes. You know, you want to head 40, 50 or even an hour. I think it's a lot easier to listen to two or three people for an hour as it is for one person. So that's another reason. I mean, I love your podcast. You know, I listen to Always Cheating. You know, the guys who got the assist. There's what I like about them. They're all different. Mm-hmm. And to me, it doesn't really matter about the length. You know, I just quite happily sit in a coffee shop, listen to Josh and Brandon for an hour and a half. And I'll be, by the end of it, I think, where did that hour and a half go? It just flies by. So it's all, everyone has different tastes. So it's, I think the reason my one does so well is, it does probably hit those people that don't have time for the longer ones.
Yeah, agreed.
And the partnership with The Athletic come up?
Yeah, so it must be about two seasons now The Athletic's been going. So I got a message during the summertime from one of the guys there, who basically were just saying there's this new website coming. You know, it's gonna be a game changer in the UK in terms of football journalism. And yeah, it sounds great. And to be honest, at the time, I had absolutely no idea how big it was going to be. So I agreed to it. You know, I think it was initially just an article a week, FPL content. Great. And then they did the launch, I think it was early August. And I seen, you know, the names that were involved. I couldn't believe it. So I think my first article went up on the website and I was scrolling through the Athletic app, and it was like, you know, James Pearce, Michael Cox. And I was sitting pinching myself. I was like, I can't believe my name is up beside all these guys. And even still, I'm shocked to see it up there. So initially I kind of went in blind, to be honest. I didn't know what it was going to be. Obviously an absolute privilege now to be involved with it. And then, so initially it was just content, articles. And then they contacted me then probably about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, about podcasts. They were about to release all of their, you know, their big portfolio of podcasts. You know, I think they've got one for every club. There's lots of other good ones, you know, Ornstein and all that kind of stuff. And I think they wanted to dip their toe into FPL with the podcast stuff as well. So we had a really good chat. Initially, it was just, I was kind of advising them what to do in terms of FPL. And I actually remember suggesting to them people like yourselves, people like Surgery, people like Tom.
Well, you know, you didn't suggest well enough, did you?
I know. I think
James, they listened and they realised we're shit.
I tried. You can't say I didn't try. And then I think it was a matter of, look, you're doing our FPL content. You've got your podcast. Why don't we just acquire your one? And that's how it worked. So we've got the agreement there. You know, it's their podcast. I still host it, and that's the way it's been going for the last couple of seasons. So yeah, it's. I think a lot of people. It's great. People love seeing the FPL stuff on The Athletic, because I think a lot of the people who sign up to The Athletic in the first place, they don't really expect to find any FPL stuff there. And I would love if there was even more. I would love if there was even more writers and stuff. We've been talking about that and stuff. So hopefully in the future they will expand. But yeah, it's great to have FPL content on there. And I think it's, for me as well, the podcast, it's probably, you know, having that expertise, you know, to, you know, spice up the podcast with the jingles and stuff, because I'm absolutely used to this. And then it's, those guys are obviously experts, are getting it out there as well. So it's probably opened up a lot new listeners for me, particularly in the US, you know, where The Athletic is used by a lot of people. So yeah, it's been amazing. And again, just really lucky to have my name on there.
Yeah, and to everyone from The Athletic who's listening, it's help@planetfpl.com for all inquiries. Yeah, cheers, thanks. Over to you, Serge.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about the growth with The Athletic. I don't think any of us realised how big that platform was going to get. And it's good that FPL content is in there. I mean, even when we're recording this week with the likes of Andy, Let's Talk FPL on YouTube, who's 100,000 subscribers or whatever it is. Honestly, when we started podcasting 2 or 3 years ago and the people's numbers were in the low thousands, I didn't think that FPL channels could get that big on YouTube, for example. Like, I still look at that number and I'm like, wow, that's a really, really impressive number. I never thought the community or the size of listenership or viewership would ever get that big. So I suppose it's testament to the game that it has gotten so big.
Even when I look at my own Twitter numbers, you know, 150,000, it boggles my mind, to be honest, because we are in a niche market. It's a niche market, first of all. But, you know, the people who take it very, very seriously and follow people on Twitter is even smaller. The dog's going nuts here, sorry.
We'll get four on the pod, no probs.
Yeah, the numbers, yeah, like, you know, looking at Andy's YouTube numbers is unbelievable. But it's amazing to see.
Yeah, really good.
We'll ask him about that tomorrow. Certainly.
For sure, indeed.
If you imagine what our following would be like if we were actually good at FPL, Serge.
Oh, let's see. We might have a few more seasons. That time will come.
Yeah, I don't think so.
As I always think in every season, that 75% of the top 10K managers have never been in the top 10K before. Gives me hope every single season. And then by the time we get to game week 4, it's ruined.
Are there any do's and don'ts for you at the start of the season, Mark? I got the impression listening to your last pod that promoted players are a no-no for you. Is that kind of like a strict rule you have in your mind, going back things you've learned from previous seasons?
Yeah, I think it's just through experience. Probably being burnt a few times, which probably plays a part. And I think do's and don'ts, it's probably a pretty common one. But yeah, it's, for me, I do really focus on players who I know are going to play game week 1, who I know have done it FPL-wise and in the Premier League before. And I do tend to avoid those three promoted teams. And the main reason I avoid them is because I don't watch any championship football. The only championship game I've seen last season was the playoff final. And as an eye test manager, I like to run the rule over them before I invest in them. So it's like any rule I have. It's never 100% strict, because I think Mitrovic sneaked his way into my squad last season. But that's probably partly because he was in the Premier League before. And I thought he was good value. But I think this season, at most, it will be one. I think it's this guy Tony that everyone's talking about. You know, again, I've only seen him play once in the playoff final, which is a pretty good performance. But again, it might just come down to, you know, if my last forward spot is his price tag, he'll just go in there mainly out of, you know, squad flexibility and squad structure, rather than really having a strong belief that he's going to be, you know, a top class FPL asset. So yeah, I do tend to avoid those teams. And yeah, you'll see my team in game week 1, and there won't be any surprises. You know, you can probably pick 11 or 12 of them already.
Do you use stats at all to make your decisions?
Not very much. So I think last season I probably used stats less than ever before, because I was watching so many games. So when I, you know, usually I would try and watch, in a normal season, I would watch 5 games each weekend. So that means over the course of 2 weekends, you would have your eyes on all 20 teams, hopefully, unless, you know, Burnley are playing twice on a Saturday at 3 o'clock or something, which you don't really
miss anyway. Let's try some Burnley off this week, Serge.
So yeah, it's I forget what the question was now.
Stats. Do you use stats for your decision?
Yeah, see, they've gone out of my head already.
So, no, point proven.
For me, it's always, I feel like I watch enough games. You know, I make all my notes while I'm watching the games. And then it's a matter of, you know, I record a little podcast for patrons about each game I watch. And I do look at the stats for those, but it's very basic stuff. You know, it's looking at your shots on target, who's taking the corners, all those little things, you know, chances created. So I do look at them, but I probably don't put too much weight on them. But it's something I would never ignore them, because I think it's a good fact check on your own eye test, because I try and look at stats after a game, you know, with an open mind and think, you know, have I seen things here that I want to see, or have I missed things that I should be seeing? And the stats will kind of fact check you on that. If I think, you know, if I've been saying for a couple of weeks, you know, Harrison's not a great option, maybe I'll watch the game without even knowing it. Then I'll be kind of saying to myself, he's not playing well. Then I'll look at the stats. He's had 4 shots on target. I think, right, you know, maybe I'm missing that when I'm watching the game. So I do look at stats, but for me, it always comes just watching the games is the way I've always played the game.
Yeah, I'm similar in the way that I love looking at stats, having watched the game, and be like, possession, for example, I always think, oh, this feels like 50-50. And then you pull up the stats and it's 70-30. Like, how am I missing that? Potentially, like you mentioned the Harrison example, yeah. Were they P-rollers from 30 yards that just went into the keeper's gloves, or are they actual shots on target and efforts that could have gone in?
Let's talk a few defenders, Mark. I know we're going to contradict ourselves here by talking a little bit of FPL. But who's stood out for you from the prices in terms of defenders?
Yeah, I'm actually just opening up the website here for the first time in a few weeks. It's actually quite nice to
Good
look
man.
At it. So my first draft about a month ago, the defenders in it are Trent, who I think is probably locked in to my team. Just love him as a player, love him as an FPL asset. He's just a fun player to own, and obviously the potential is always there. So Trent's probably locked in. That's another saying that people don't like, locked in, but he probably is. Luke Shaw, who we mentioned, 5.5, injury dependent. I like that price for him. I thought he could have easily been 6. Fofana went straight in because he was 4.5. I think he's underpriced. Luke Adin, 5.5, went in there as well. And then it was just a 4 million filler Mankilo. But having not been tinkering, but kind of been thinking about FPL over the last few weeks, and I tweeted about it a few days ago, I really like the idea of Trent and Robertson. I'm pretty sure maybe even the last 2 seasons. So I've probably started with both. So you know, if you've got a brace, you may as well go for the hat trick. So I think I could end up starting the season with Trent and Robertson. And if I do, you know, obviously maybe Shaw and Lukadine wouldn't make it then, and I would probably go cheaper with a third one, or maybe probably Trent, Robbo, 2 4.5s, and a 4. You know, I really like Luke Ayling this season. I think one of the biggest shocks last season was the fact he didn't get any attacking returns. You know, talking about stats, really good numbers. Obviously, Dallas was there, so no one was really going for Ayling. But I think if he plays right back most of the season, I think at 4.5, he could be good value, because second half of last season, Leeds improved so much defensively as well. So if he's going to get the clean sheets, if he can add a few attacking returns, yeah, you know, I still remember that goal celebration he did that was ruled out for by VAR. So I think we could see a few of those this season. So someone like him, Fofana, Ben White, you know, you've got loads and loads of 4.5 options. So yeah, that's kind of where my head is at defenders at the moment.
Do you, with Robertson, he's part of the decision, because I kind of picking up to a point you said on that podcast as well, is Robertson a case for you that you're thinking about, oh, there are all these other good sort of Luke Shaw, Deans, and then the 4.5s, or are you looking at like Robertson versus Jota? What are you looking at from a decision making perspective there? Are you looking first and foremost thinking, I want to start with 3 Liverpool players, the third choice is Robertson versus Jota? Or are you looking at Robertson and going, do you know what, I can get good assets here that are a lot cheaper?
The way I look at it is, like I said earlier, game week 1, who's going to play, Robertson or Jota? I think Robertson is the more nailed one, because we know Jota gets rotated from time to time. So that's, I think it's more that reason. I want to have 3 Liverpool, Trent and Salah go straight in. So then it does become a shootout between Robertson and Jota. And although there is a lot of other good defensive options, I think what I'm going to try and do this season as well is just try and, as often as possible, pick players that I love watching and who I rate extremely highly aside from FPL, And Robertson's one of those guys. You know, love watching him. Unbelievable player. And he's been amazing FPL-wise for a couple of seasons as well. So I just like, and I think a big factor here as well is Van Dijk being back. I think you can have a lot more faith in Liverpool for clean sheets when the big man's back there. And I always as well in my head over the seasons, whether it's picking a game week one team or whether it's making transfers, I always try and buy a player who I think could stay in my team all season, because I don't like making transfers. I try and make as few transfers as possible. So if I pick a Robertson or I pick a Jota, you know, who am I more likely to sell in 4 or 5 weeks' time? I think it's probably Jota, because I'll get annoyed with his limited minutes, and Robertson will probably play 90 every week. So that's my thinking on that one, and that's why I'm more likely to go Robertson than I am Jota.
And of course, if you go with Robertson and that proves to be wrong and you do decide you want to sell, you've got everyone in the game bar Trent to,
exactly,
to choose
it's
from.
Probably so having Robertson leaves you a bit more flexible in defence. And I think it's easier to do it this season with Trent and Robbo because of all the great cheap strikers. I can't look past, without having tinkered yet, really, I can't look past having 3 cheap strikers because there's so many. You know, you can jump off on fixtures or you can just pick 3 and back them for the season. And I think a lot of them will be very good value around, you know, 6 to 8 million. So I think when you set yourself up to have 3 cheap forwards, you know, I'm kind of ruling Kane out already without giving it much thought, because
you don't think he'll do well at City?
Yeah, well, that might change my thinking if he goes there. I think it's Spurs.
When
100% he won't be in my team, but I think it's City. It will make me think. But again, even if he is at City, you know, if you're going to go Salah and Bruno, you're probably not going to fit Kane in there, or at least it's going to compromise. So I really like Trent, Robbo, 3 cheap strikers, Salah, Bruno, and then fill in the gaps.
I know this is really boring for everybody, and not everybody listens to all of our pods, so I'll repeat myself. Harry Kane will not be playing for Manchester City in game week 1. He might be in game week 2. You're not going to start with 12.5 million worth of forward potentially unavailable in game week 1 for you. The only reason you're starting with Harry Kane is if you actually believe that he's staying at Tottenham and you want him. Because a lot of people are looking at game week 3, where there's a good case to say that Tottenham at home to Watford, Kane might be the best captaincy shout. That's why you'd be starting with Harry Kane, not because you think he might move to Man City. He's not going to be a Man City player when the season starts. At least he isn't going to play in game week 1.
I hope if it does happen, I hope it happens late, because I think what will happen, a lot of people will start, like me, 3 cheap forwards. Let's say the transfer happens game week 2, then people are forced wildcard early or not, because if you've got 3 cheap forwards, it's extremely difficult to get Harry Kane in there. So I think if Kane moves to City late after game week 1, it's going to trigger a lot of early wildcards to get him in.
Yeah, interesting. I think if it does happen, it will happen late.
Looking like that, yeah.
The fact that the two teams are playing each other in game week 1, I just know that Daniel Levy's going to stick his heels in. There's no way he's having Kane rock up at Tottenham in a Man City shirt game week 1. It's not going to happen. Okay, cool. I mean, that just about wraps us, I think, Sitch.
It does.
Enjoyed that, Mark. Thank you.
Yeah, that was great. Very Cheers for having me, lads.
I think every pod that we're doing in this Content Creators Week for James and I is a chance to like pick a brain of someone more experienced and actually better at FPL than us. And there's a number of things in my mind now, especially around watching less football live. And
you already said you don't watch the football. You just wait for me to talk about it.
Well, I don't watch it with a tactical head on, James, but definitely watch it in the sense of live checking for updates and FPL points and that kind of thing. I want to just cut that out and let's see if that kind of helps in decision-making.
Suge, have you given any thought, Suge, about, you know, do you have any idea how many deadlines you think you'll miss this season?
I haven't, to be honest with you, but probably 3. I'm going to go for 3. I'm going to go for 3 this year.
Mark, see if you can get it from one of the bookies as a request. Like over under 3 deadlines or something.
easiest money that we'll ever make.
There we go.
The best bit's when I send him fucking reminders as well and he still forgets, mate.
I remember it got confusing because Sky, obviously you get a reminder all the way up to the thing, and so James is sending me reminders of Sky for FPL. Now he's telling me next week we've got to talk about Fantasy Scotland and then and so on and so on. This is going to be fun. So yeah,
you didn't just miss a deadline though. You missed your bloody free hit deadline.
That was exactly it. So James, do you want to tell everybody who else we got on for the rest of the week for those that don't already know?
Yes, I shall. But before we do that, let's let Mark plug all his bits. Mark, where can everyone find you if they live under a rock or anything like that?
Yeah, best place to find me on Twitter at FPL General. I had to think about that there. I haven't said it for a while. The 59th Minute podcast. There's one which was released a couple of weeks ago. There'll probably be three more, hopefully, before the season starts. And patreon.com/FPL General as well if you want some extra content.
Nice.
Good stuff, mate. Good stuff. Tomorrow for us, we've got Let's Talk FPL and the Black Box Boys. Mark and Az will be joining us on Friday.
Perfect. And if you want to follow us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/planetfpl. Other than that, just leave me to stay safe. Ciao for now.
Yeah, please try and stay safe. Thanks, Mark. Cue music, please, man child.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.